The Bastards of Boston Baseball Podcast.
Back to Folk. Red Sox fans have longed to hear it. The Boston Red Sox are world champion. Game over, series over, and the Red Sox are world champs again.
Yes, indeed. Here it comes. Another edition of the Bastards of Boston Baseball.
Everyone, and welcome back to another hot stove edition of the Bastards of Boston Baseball. Not a ton in terms of developments, but we did have Winterfest or whatever the Red Sox want to call it this year. The big elephant in the room story coming into that was the Red Sox didn't want to pay Jaron Duran an extra $500,000 that he was asking for. Apparently Jaron Duran extremely unreasonable in that demand, and kind of became a minor controversy. We'll have some other free agency thoughts here in the second segment, but I am Terry Cushman, joined tonight by Jeremy Schilling, Nick Diamond. How are you, gentlemen?
I'm doing well, Terry. Doing well.
Doing great here. I guess none of us were at the winter thing going on, but I would not have been part of that even if I was up in Boston right now. So $85 isn't over. You're not getting anything for that. You're not sitting in the snow. It didn't seem fun to me.
Yeah.
I'm with Nick on this. Yeah, 100%.
And cowardly, they're not doing the town hall interview that they did the last few years. Where, you know, not really a riot, but they got a lot of resistance. So don't want to be held accountable by their fans anymore. So let's just go ahead and get into it. Some arbitration stuff got done. Everyone that was eligible basically reached an agreement with the Red Sox. The one notable agreement was Garrett Crochet. He settled for $3.8 million. He was only projected to get $2.9 million, so that's a sizable increase for him. They didn't really fight on that. Duran, though, apparently they were at $3.5 million. He wanted $4 million. They wouldn't give it to him. Tentatively, they're going to a hearing. Jeremy?
On the Crochet thing, that makes all the sense in the world. Grease the wheels for negotiations on the long-term deal. That's how you should do business with the people that you want to employ that are assets for your program. So that part of it makes all the sense in the world, which is why the second half of it makes absolutely no sense to me. And this organization should be in the middle of a culture change publicly. Like, cheap, bad facilities, all the things that we talk about constantly. And they have an opportunity to pay the guy who finished, was it third in wins above replacement last year?
Top five either way.
So I think it was three, but definitely top five. There's guys making $30, $50 million a year. He's one of the best players in baseball. You still get him because of the union agreement. You still get them so inexpensive, and you can't do the right thing. And then by not doing the right thing, you look publicly like absolute cheap morons. It doesn't make any sense that the same team that made the Crochet decision, which is the right thing to do, and then screw it up with Duran and it become a public thing. Makes no sense.
Nick?
I agree with almost everything you said there. I still think they'll get it before they go to arbitration. They've done that in the past, gotten it done right before actual deadline. But it's insulting to Duran to even go this far. Like $500,000 when you're $50 million under the luxury tax. Who cares at that point? It's just insulting to your best player last year. And hopefully Duran's got a good attitude about it, because I would be kind of pissed if I was him.
Durant's in a tough situation being that he's a late bloomer. So he's not going to have the same type of free agency as some of these other guys when he finally gets there, because he's going to be 32 years old. So, you know, $500K to Jaren Durant is, you know, that's a meaningful thing. And, you know, he's coming off of a year where he had some minor controversies, most of it self-inflicted, but you were just going to be happy in 2024 if he matched what he did in 2023. But not only did he match it, he blew it out of the water and had one of the best seasons of any player last year. This is the mind-boggling thing. Supposedly, the Red Sox were willing to pay Juan Soto $700 million, but you can't give Jaren Durant an extra $500,000? Like, what world are we living in?
Well, we know they were never going to pay Juan Soto $70 million. That's illusory. So my secondary take on this is, for the fans of Jaren Durant on the Boston Red Sox long term, this is not a good sign. The reason, again, why they paid Crochet is because they do want to extend him 5+ years. This, to me, is an indicator that the Red Sox don't see Jaren Durant in the long-term future of the club. You know, so it just – that's the only explanation that makes sense.
I mean, you could make the case in a couple of years they could just ship him. I mean, you're going to have Anthony. Rafaela still figures to be part of the long-term here. If you end up having some of your prospects in the infield come up, Christian Campbell could play the outfield. He has previously. So you can make a case that, you know, Durant definitely doesn't fit the long term. But here's the thing. The Red Sox needed to flip the narrative in a lot of ways this winter. And they did, at least in terms of executing an aggressive trade. But they still haven't signed guys to long-term deals yet. The only guy who's gotten a 2-year deal is Patrick Sandoval, who might not even play the first year of it. And the other thing they needed to, the other narrative that desperately needed to be flipped, is their public perception narrative. Nobody respects the Red Sox. They have no friends. No friends in the media, no friends in other front offices, no friends in terms of agents. The Red Sox are toxic as hell. And all they did by stiffing Jaren Durant of that measly $500,000 was they poured gasoline on the fire and caused a self-inflicted controversy here. One of the things about Breslow, I've already expressed concerns that maybe he's just not a strong negotiator at the negotiations table. And he's got the personality of a shoe. That's for certain. Like, he's not a rah-rah guy. He's not going to go out there and fire up the fan base with his comments. He's not going to pound his chest and say, we're the Boston Red Sox. We're going to dominate this year. His transactions haven't translated to that, and his actions haven't. He's just a business guy with no personality and no real self-awareness by the looks of it. And I don't like him. I just don't like him. And I don't think anybody in that team does. And at the last second, going into winter weekend, whatever they decided to call it, Rafi Devers, Walker Buehler, Justin Slayton, and Cutter Crawford all canceled at the last minute. Maybe the reasons were legitimate. With Devers, it was a last-minute scheduling conflict, and that's all they gave. We don't know what the other reasons are, but it sounds like the players in the front office, I don't know that there's a good relationship there.
Yeah, I think it's just a bad look. I mean, you might have five or six different legitimate reasons. Obviously, there's a national catastrophe on our hands here in California, and I'm sure someone lives out there. Walker Buehler played out there, like Nick said, pregame. So he might have some family ties or a house he's worried about. So I know Rafi Devers has done some humanitarian things, involved in a hospital opening in the DR recently, I believe. So I'm sure things pop up. People get sick. People have kids. They get sick. Like, that's a normal thing. But with this team, everything's magnified because of the way it's been run the last 5 or 6 years. So when stuff like this happens, our inclination as the people covering the team are, where is the disconnect? And then you get no explanation. So it just looks bad. At the same time, you're screwing up the Duran thing. Now, one thing you said to me that stuck with me, Terry, is you called Breslow a businessman without a personality. What about him suggests that he's a businessman? To me, he's a baseball player that is trying to run a baseball team, but he doesn't have any business sense whatsoever.
Yeah, the better way I could have put it is, he's just sticking to the binders. He's sticking to the playbook, spreadsheets in front of him. He's not humanizing with his team at all. He's not personable. He's not relatable. He's just a grossly disconnected guy that I don't think is really fit.
To that point, do we know if he spends any time around the team?
We don't.
I mean, to me, he seems like the kind of like C-level guy, like, you know, that just distances himself from the workforce. So like, he stays up in the offices and he's not in the clubhouse. He's not at off day batting practice. You know, I'll be interested to see. I don't remember from last spring training, but I'll be interested to see, is he walking around during spring training, or is he, you know, in the locker room, understands the personality of the team, right? Sees certain factions interacting within the locker room. So he knows what the clubhouse needs when it comes time to make an important move. Go ahead, Nick.
You mentioned him at spring training. Actually, a fun story I have here is, I was at spring training, and it was the day they traded John Schreiber to the Royals. And about 5 minutes before that, the Jeff Passan tweet came out, I got the notification, and Breslow was out signing autographs for fans. He disappeared, and I was like, yo, I'm going to go, like, try to mess with Breslow, you know, because that's what I do, like, yell at him, be like, you better sign someone good or whatever. But, yeah, and then he disappears. He's on the phone. Next thing you know, I get a Jeff Passan notification. So he was at spring training walking around. So I don't know. The one thing I did like about him, when they hired him over Chaim Bloom, was he was a former player, so I thought he would be around more. But I don't think he was around very much this season, but I don't actually know that. It just didn't seem like he was. Maybe in this Netflix thing coming up, we might see him, but I really doubt Breslow will be part of that very much.
Here's another thing, like, and it goes back to what Jeremy was touching on. He was a player. Like, he has to understand Jaren Duran's mindset. And for him to just coldly not even accommodate just such a small demand, it's just crazy. I mean, what would he have thought if he was in that position? Like, if anybody should be personable and relatable, it should be Breslow. Here's another thing, too. Tristan Casas, you know, he's always in front of the camera. You know, he did several interviews on Saturday. He told the media that the Red Sox said, no, we were never, the trade discussions for you were never serious. Everyone and their mother is saying, oh yeah, they're actively trying to ship him. They're actively trying to move him. And at this point, like, if you're Craig Breslow, why lie? Like, you don't have to come out and say, oh yeah, we're having conversations about Tristan Casas. You don't have to say it that way, but the way to answer it is, well, we're open-minded, in terms of improving the team, and we're looking at some options. But he's not even smart enough to deflect that way. He's like, no, we're not trying to trade him at all. It's like, dude, you just don't know how to do it.
Terry, the business model on Yawkey Way is to lie.
It has to be.
I mean, that's what it is. We've talked about it on this podcast since I rejoined it in, I think it was April. I mean,
hey, I think it look, was.
There are so many instances of provable lies. So my question becomes, right? Well, two things. One, if ownership in the front office will lie to the fan base, then they're willing to lie to the clubhouse. We can all agree on that.
I would say so.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
Where is, I want to frame this correctly. Where is their mindset with the lying? Do they not know we know? Do they not get any feedback from the media? We're not the media. We're, a hobby podcast, whatever. So I don't think they're listening to the Bastards of Boston Baseball, but they got to hear from Carrabas that he's big enough. They got to hear from him. They got to hear from the media. They got to hear from radio media. Like, how do they continue to perpetrate lying right to our faces when we know they're lying right to our faces? And if Tristan Casas believes that he hasn't been shopped actively, does he not have like Facebook or Twitter or like check the news related to the organization he works for? Like, I don't understand their mindset. I'm not doing this as a thing. I actually have no idea how they can continue to perpetrate this.
They don't care because they keep making money. It doesn't matter to them. They can say whatever they want. If people still show up to Fenway Park and keep buying merchandise and keep buying beer, it doesn't matter. And also, Tristan Casas is probably lying right back to us too. Who cares? Like, he doesn't need to lie. He doesn't need to tell the truth to us. He knows he's probably gone. Like you said, if he doesn't know he's gone, he's dumb. Like, they're 100% trying to get him out the door before spring training. They want him gone. They want a new fresh start on the corners. That's what Breslow wants. I don't know if it's the right decision. It might be. It might not be. Who cares? I think that's what's going to happen. And Tristan Casas, if he doesn't think it's a real possibility, he's just as dumb as the fans believing these lies from the Red Sox.
You know, you guys bring up some interesting points, and I think I've given up on the notion of the fan base just boycotting the
not
games. I mean, you did see
it's not even the fan base. It's other fan bases. Even if the Red Sox fan base boycotted, they're still going to make their money at Fenway Park. It doesn't matter.
Well, true, because the Toronto people show up, the Baltimore people. Yeah, I've just given up on that being a thing and being that something that can shift, ownership to come back and be the, the ownership group that they were in the first, 14, 15 years. But one thing that can kind of change the narrative is if a guy like Rafi Devers or Cutter Crawford or even Jarren Duran at this point, if they all openly start bad-mouthing ownership, I think that would be the chaos that we need to have some tough decisions getting made.
There are only two people in the building, not in the front office, that have the power to do that. That's Rafi Devers and Alex Cora. You can't. Jarren Duran has not made his money. Like, if this is his last season and he makes $3.5 million, he's gonna go have to find a career, right? So if you want to make the sort of money where you are set for life and can go coach high school baseball like Dustin Pedroia is doing, and just live your life, no change, same house, same cars, same everything else, these people still have to be paid. This team doesn't pay their players. They don't extend their players. So they've insulated themselves from it, from the staff, from the workforce. So there's only two people that have the cachet. Devers, who's got a guaranteed contract. The worst thing that's going to happen to him is he goes and plays for somewhere else And if he does, God bless him, have it be for a winning organization that cares about those sorts of things. Or Alex Cora, who showed in a limited capacity before he got signed that he was willing to criticize the front office. That's it. The rest of the organization doesn't have the leverage.
I can't disagree with that. I mean, maybe by June, maybe a Walker Buehler type guy could be like, dude, this organization's a clown show. I mean, people would listen to him. Garrett Crochet sounds like a stand-up guy who's going to speak his mind. I don't know, you know, what could happen down the road with him. I think if they can't extend him by opening day, that's going to be a major elephant in the room. And it's going to be a narrative that the Red Sox won't be able to control at any point beyond that, unless an extension is reached.
Let's talk about that for a second, Terry, because one of the things that happens with arbitration, and I know we don't want to cross sport reference, but the Swayman situation with the Bruins, the failure to sign him until essentially the eve of the hockey season, that affected Jeremy Swayman. Like, he complained all summer. He had a problem with the arbitration he had to go through the year before. And then his play suffered, although he's playing well now, his play suffered for a large majority of the start of this hockey season. Okay, that's all I'll say about hockey. The people, the professional athletes that have to go through the arbitration process in baseball always complain. You can't not take it personal. If you've never been through an arbitration, they essentially put on evidence why you're not worth what you think you're worth. So your employer goes in front of a panel of three arbitrators and they say all the negative things about you. And these people will act as if the good things as to why they want you to work for them don't exist. It is incredibly personal. And I can't imagine somebody without, like, having gone through something like that before to not take it personally. So then you have Duran playing for that team that said all those things about him. How, like, would I be surprised if Duran gets off to a bad start? Not one bit. Not one bit. If Crochet doesn't sign, that becomes a high pressure point for that player. Again, Crochet has not made his money yet. Once he signs a contract, he knows his life is set. His heirs have what they want, if that's the way he wants to handle his money. But until that point, that's incredibly high leverage. Every start he makes, what happens if I blow up my arm today? So why are we putting those pressure points into a season that's really important for the trajectory of this club? They're creating negative leverage, negative pressure on this season if they don't sign Crochet and do the right thing with Duran.
Signing Crochet is a 100% has to happen. If they don't sign him, he walks in free agency. If they don't sign him by opening day, they'll never have a chance to re-sign him. If they don't, they have to give him whatever he wants. I don't care what it is. I know I posted a tweet. I know Terry has posted a mock tweet about his sign or his contract. Just pay it. I don't care. Just pay it. Make him sign for 6, 7, 8 years, whatever he wants. If you gave up that many assets for that pitcher and that's your guy, you have to lock him up and you cannot lose him in free agency. It'll be embarrassing, even more embarrassing than what they've done recently in the last 5 to 6 years. You can't lose him. And the other contracts that we've brought up, or they've been brought up lately, about the Campbells, the Anthony's, and Mayer. I don't know why we're even entertaining those before Crochet gets done. Why talk to a guy who's never played Major League Baseball? They have like 40 combined games in AAA? Let him start the year in AAA. Let him start in the major leagues, and then, or do it in spring training. Get Crochet done now. Don't even think about those guys right now. It's just so frustrating.
With the case of those two, Campbell and Anthony, you can wait a year and then do it.
It's too early.
Yeah. I mean, go ahead.
I can see how they respond to big league pitches. If Anthony comes up here and goes nuts, he's never going to sign. So that might be your only chance to get him beforehand. But still, he's not your priority.
It's funny, but you said that because I did read some quotes, and Campbell is absolutely open to an extension, and that's what he said. The way Anthony answered the question was, well, if they approached me, I'd at least have a conversation about it. So he's already got the business mindset.
And he's younger. He'll get the free agency as a younger player, too. I think he knows that he's got the bigger payday. Campbell's, what, 22, 23 almost already. So he's going to get there at 30 like most guys do. Roman Anthony might get there at 27.
I think Anthony is looking at a deal of between 150 and 200. And the comp that I'm going off of here is Wander Franco's. He, like Anthony, was the number one prospect in all of Major League Baseball, universally rated as number one prospect. So I think that's about what you're looking at, with Anthony. And if it happens, it happens. I'm good with it. I would hope with Anthony, it's a 10-year deal. Well, 8 years with a couple of really expensive options.
I couldn't disagree more.
Well, it's only it's only going to take him to about age 30 or so, 31, something like that. You're getting him in his absolute prime.
Are we really considering giving someone $150 to $200 million who doesn't have a big league at bat?
Look at Bobby Witt. He got $300 million in his third season.
No. Hold on, Terry. You're not allowed to go to the person that absolutely best explains your point. We don't know that he's going to be Bobby Witt. Bobby Witt is one of the best players in baseball. Go ahead, Nick.
You're on mute.
You're on mute or don't have audio, Nick.
Okay, yeah, I'll keep going. So let me just put it this way. There is risk. I can't say that there's no risk here.
That's a tremendous amount of risk, Terry, because that handicaps your spending in a team that's already cheap.
But when you're – in hindsight, though, you could look back on this. And here's a deal I'm gonna use. I thought the Fernando Tatis deal was so dumb when it happened. You know, what was it? 14 years, 300 something million. I look at that now and I'm like, that's a bargain. That is an absolute bargain. So if you can get a guy like Anthony, let's just go in the middle. Let's just say 175. Let's just cut it in half. You'll look back on that and think, wow, that was one of the best signings of all time. That's why I would do it.
So you would do it today. You would be comfortable waking up to the news that the Red Sox have signed Anthony 10 years, $175 million.
Yep, I would.
That's so reckless. That's absolutely ridiculous.
It sounds insane.
More.
It sounds insane, but I...
No, look, I have no issue with a half season, a month, something to pull from. But to say that you're going to rely on a minor league career, and look, I understand his trajectory, and I hope all the experts are right. But the downside, if he's a complete dud, is a serious problem. It's a non-movable contract. You hinder the ability to shape your roster for up to a decade. There's no rush. If he makes the club, which is going to require them moving a player anyways, right? So there's going to be other shoes to fall before we get there. But let's say they move Abreu. He's your right fielder. He's hitting 280 with 12 bombs at the All-Star break. Okay, fine. Let's talk about it. He's only going to get better. But we have nothing to go on. You know how many people have good minor league careers and are rated highly that bust out? Let's talk about those guys. Let's not talk about Bobby Witt.
Well, I think in Anthony's case, the floor is high. Is he necessarily a perennial all-star? No, absolutely not. I'm not going to take that to the bank, but I think the floor is high. Let me ask you this. Let's say, I don't know what the AAV works out to be. Let's say that's 8 years, 175. I'm terrible with that.
Yeah, I'm terrible with that.
It's like 22 a year, something like that. Let's just say Abreu had a little bit more hype last year. We gave him a similar deal, and then he gave you the season he did. I mean, it's just not a complete bust. I wouldn't feel great, you know, that Abreu got that deal, not having hit lefties very well. But he's still, it's still something I can live with. I'll take the risk.
Terry, the pressure on these guys is already tremendous. Okay. Now I know they get their signing bonus. So a highly drafted player has some money in the bank if he's smart with his money, but they make no money in the minor leagues. Then you give a guy like that a contract and he gets fat and happy, but the pressure doesn't go away. And you have special competitors, special talent, special athletes, special professionals that can move forward in the face of that pressure. But most guys aren't that way. So you're going to give a guy $175 million, essentially setting him up for life, and then drop him into the pressure cooker. It makes no logical sense.
It's the norm. I mean, the Rays did it with Franco. They might have done that into the season a little bit, but
Franco had played though.
Let me look. I'm pretty sure that happened into his rookie year.
And I don't have a problem if we're at the All-Star break and he's giving you an indication that he's going to project as a big leaguer as he does in the minor leagues. But to do it now, Terry, because remember, my question was specific. Would you be happy waking up tomorrow morning to hear the news of that contract? And your answer was yes.
Yeah, I would do it for Anthony. I think his ceiling is immense, but I think his floor is also pretty high. I don't know. What are your thoughts, Nick? Break the tie.
Yeah, I think Nick's having technical difficulties with the sound, fortunately.
Yeah. He's got nothing. Nothing, Nick. You know, a guy like Campbell, I think he'll probably get more than what Rafaela got, but
for sure,
but it's not the same ceiling.
But Rafael's an elite defender with limited ability on offense. It's a totally different player. So anyways, you might have to settle the difference, with a Twitter poll, Terry. I don't know what to tell you.
They would give him a 20-year deal. Are you nuts? That's how Red Sox Twitter is.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Fair enough.
So I've kind of come to a conclusion in the last few days. I'm a lot more of a Pete Alonso guy than I am an Alex Bregman guy. I mean, you're going to move on from one of Casas or Yoshida at some point. Maybe not before opening day, but I just see Alonso as a guy that slots in better. He doesn't hit always for good average, but 3 out of 6 years, he's hit 40 or more bombs. One of those years was 53. I just think he would be a monster at Fenway, and that's the better value.
I like Alonso short term, but this roster is being built more towards the athletic approach to baseball, and he just doesn't fit that model. I don't see where he's going to fit in defensively long term. He's got a weird body type. I don't think he takes tremendous care of himself, so I don't think he's going to age well. I like him to hit 30 plus home runs for the next 3 years, but he's looking for a 5 to 7 year deal. I'm sure of it. So I don't love either option, to be honest with you. And you know how I feel about what I think we should do.
I don't think he gets more than 3.
Then you should be competitive for the player. If yeah. There's only 3-year deals being offered, you need to do the work behind the scenes to find out where other teams are, and you need to make a competitive 3-year offer.
Yeah, I mean, he not wisely declined the 3-year $90 million deal the Mets offered. You know, not huge money long term, but it was good, you know, annually for 3 years. And I don't know. Nobody wants first baseman. And here's the other thing. I think Vladimir Jr. is gonna sign with the Blue Jays. I think they will get that deal done. So you might be able to just throw an opt-out in there on Alonso, and he'll be the premier first baseman next year.
You guys hear me?
Yeah.
Yep.
All right, so I'll settle the last debate about Drac. I would say no if he's not. I think Wander Franco played 25 or 24 major league games before they gave him that contract. If he comes up and plays 25, 30, 35 amazing major league games, I'm okay with giving him that extension then, but not before he plays a major league game. I kind of agree with Jeremy. Just if he does get complacent and you give him 10 years, $175 million before he's ever played a game, he might just come out and suck. But I understand where you're both coming from. I'm not against it. I'd rather him go out there, become a superstar, and then pay him like a superstar. For the Boston Red Sox, we should be able to do that, but they can't lately. Pete Alonso, I'm okay with him on a short-term deal. 3 years is probably most I would ever give him. I'm not giving him more. But I think I'd rather have him on a 1 year with an opt-out. And I don't think Vlad is going to sign with the Blue Jays. I don't think anybody wants to sign with the Blue Jays. Well, they should just trade him.
The reason I believe
that's my
that,
opinion, but who knows?
The reason I believe he will is they topped out at $350. He was asking $450. The deal didn't happen, but Vladimir did give them a window till the start of spring training to come back and try to get it done. And the fact he's even giving them a window tells me that there is an openness to playing there. And then on top of that, he doesn't even care about his salary for this coming year because he's making $28 million. $28.5 million is what they settled at arbitration-wise. So it's not like whether he signs the deal or he doesn't, it's going to be an instant shot in the arm like it could be to a Garrett Crochet-type guy to go from, say, $3.8 million to $15 million. Like that's a big deal to Crochet, but Vladimir Jr. is in a different boat. So, I think they'll get it done. I hope I'm wrong, 'cause I want to have a shot at him foolishly.
You know? Why wouldn't they have gotten it done by now? They've been trying to throw money at everyone. Why not throw it at Vlad? They've been trying to sign Santander, sign anyone, you know.
Yeah.
Burns, they wanted Freed, they wanted anybody, but they can't even sign their own guy. Why not just give it to Vlad? I don't know why it's not been done, so that's why I don't think it's going to get done.
Well, I hope you're right, but I don't know. I just feel like for some reason I think he likes it in Toronto. So,
I mean, I'd like to make $450 million in Toronto with no media scrutiny, no national pressure. I mean, that sounds like a pretty cush gig.
He's comfortable. Yeah, he's comfortable there. That's
come
why
to the pressure cooker, Boston, New York, LA, making $450 million. It's on you.
A few years that's ago, different. Foolishly, I thought Mike Trout's going to demand a trade this winter. He's sick of this crap. He wants to win. And then he started getting hurt, and I'm like, he doesn't want to go anywhere. No one's going to challenge him about his performance or his durability. He's so safe there in Anaheim. So, yeah.
Exactly. Exactly my point.
Yeah. Well, all right. I think we beat the dead horse pretty good for this episode. I may try to get a Toronto podcaster on in the next 2 or 3 days, similarly how I did with the Detroit Tigers podcaster, Mark Gorosh. That was a fantastic interview, and we had a lot of good feedback. So we talked about the Bregman pursuit and some other aspects about Detroit, and we kind of went back to 2013 as well when we clashed in that ALCS. So it was a really good episode. Check that out. I'll see. I don't know literally a single Toronto Blue Jays podcaster, so I'll have to look around. But we'll pick their brain on Vladimir, what they think the future is, and so on and so forth. And if something does develop Red Sox related, we'll be back to cover that as well. So everyone have a great start to your week. Take care.